How many thoughts have you thought today? Amazingly, that question was asked by somebody else today. I think that was Ingeborg Bolt. She says, I tried to think my first thought, and I said, well, then you've already lost. Because as long as you try to think your first thought, you're not thinking it. And I said, when you try to think your first thought, you've already thought maybe 250,000 thoughts already. Oh, so many. Yeah. I mean, bring, it's like a machine gun. Not a machine gun. It's like a motion picture going through your mind in a high-speed definition. What do they call it? You know, high-speed definition photography. And it just goes so fast. Now, you, again, all of you have seen Bleep, of course. Now, in Bleep, the lady was saying, you think this camera is seeing what it's seeing, but it sees more. It sees what it's photographing, and it sees the surroundings, and it sees what's also going on in the background. Now, this she didn't say. If you had the proper type of, let's call it chemicals, you could develop the film in the camera, digital or otherwise, and you could see the dimensions upon dimensions upon dimensions that are here right now, that we have all around us. And if you could begin to see these dimensions, you'd say, oh my gosh, there's ghosts and there's things like that. But they're not ghosts. They're very solid beings. They're very solid, just like you and me. We are ghosts, of course, but we're not very solid. We are very transient. And just like all those beings expressing themselves on many dimensions, that's where they are. Now, could have you ever taken ghost photography? I have. It's kind of fun. Mm-hmm. And I did this with, what was his name? He was a book writer. A real great guy. He and his wife and his grandma, his mother-in-law, were there. And as I was talking with him, and they took a picture of us, and about behind us was a picture of Jesus.
Oh, Joseph Murphy.
Joseph Murphy, thank you. And so behind us was this picture of Jesus. And on the photograph, on the picture, this was with film camera, and on the film camera, it had a halo around each one of our heads. Joseph's, mine, and his wife. And I was happy to be included. His grandma, I mean, his mother-in-law, she was an older lady. Of course, Joseph Murphy was in his 80s at that time, but he married a young wife. And so she had taken the pictures. And I showed them to her later. I gave them all copies. And then I went to the Joseph Murphy Club in Germany, in Munich, and I told them about it. Do you have the picture? Do you have the picture? I said, yeah, sure. Do you have the film? Sure. You know, I didn't want it. And can we have it? Sure. And I'm sure that, you see, they love Joseph Murphy so much over there. They make pictures of him more than lifestyle size, and they put them on the walls in their home. And I was in Kurt Schweigart's house, and he was just transferring over from Joseph Murphy to our philosophy, and he had Joseph Murphy life size standing in every room. And I said, my goodness, I said, one thing I don't allow, that people have pictures of me. I mean, if you want to follow the philosophy that we teach, super, but don't worship the man. Because the man has not enough to give you that the philosophy can give you much more of. But so be it. And so be it for my ghost encounter. But there had been several others that I had not photographed because I didn't have a camera along. At different times in my life, like when my mother's ectoplasm left her body and she died, and she was ready to go. She was not going to wait any 3 days that they say you wait. And so as soon as she pulled the plug for herself, up out of her chest and out of her heart area, or head, I wasn't really paying close attention. Out came this ectoplasm, and it just floated there for a second, and then tchung, it joined the universal allness. And I thought, man, I should have had a photograph of that. Wouldn't that have been great? You know. But you see, there's more going on around us than we ever will realize. And there's more going on around us than we'll ever be aware of. Edgar Mitchell, our astronaut, Apollo 14, he was out in outer space, and he had made arrangements with a psychic on Earth to send him messages. And so he wrote down the messages, and he wrote them down at the time in outer space that he was sent the messages, and the guy wrote them down where he was, and they were consistent. Edgar is very sensitive, far more than he lets himself know, but he is an intellectual, and he is a very fine scientific mind, and he didn't want to get labeled too much with things extrasensory, but he did. And that's why he started the Noetic Sciences. And in Noetic Sciences, they have these things all the time. And then I worked with Thelma Moss, who was with, she was a doctor of psychology, philosophy, and something else too, at the University of Chicago in Los Angeles, UCLA. And I had the chance of working with her with blind people and others, and with Carillion photography. And she was conducting several classes on ghosts and on levitation and teleportation and all these neat things. And it was just fascinating being in her presence and being a reporter covering all these things. But it was like with her, it was everyday stuff. You know, she's not proving anything to anybody. She's just doing it. And with the participants in her class, the students, they weren't being proven to them they could do it, they just were doing it. And they were just having a wonderful time doing it. When we get in our consciousness to the point of just doing it, and we don't tell anybody about it, it's just like Ingeborg Bolz from Frankfurt, Germany, is it? Wherever she is. She talked today about my lectures and my translations for my lectures. And she says she hears me speak English, and then she hears how I'm translated, and she says it's not pure philosophy, it's not purely what words I'm using, and that she would like to translate it and make it all pure. And I said, say, that's super. However, I cannot choose my translators too easily. I just take what we get, and some know our philosophy very well, and some don't. Now, Stefan is one of our translators, and he knows our philosophy very well, but Stefan has a problem. Stefan has stepped beyond the fundamental philosophy into the absolute philosophy, and he starts translating based on the absolute philosophy instead of the fundamental philosophy. And when you translate on the absolute philosophy instead of the fundamental philosophy, then a lot of things that make sense on the fundamental level don't on the absolute level. And so this makes a little bit of a problem there, but not big enough to make us shake in the boots. So we have an opportunity here of not worrying about how people interpret what we say or how we are interpreted in what is done. It's just a matter of being ourselves and having fun. When I was standing there saying goodbye to my mom as she was on her next out-of-body journey with her ectoplasm, I said, bye, Mom, you know, and so she went, and I saw a lot, but I was not emotionally in a position to pay attention. And if I were emotionally in a position, if I knew that she was going to take off that moment, I would have said, okay, Mom, now let me be analytic about this. Let's see what you're doing here and how you're doing this here. But she sort of shocked me. She says, Herb, you're not letting me go. And I said, I'm letting you go, you know, but I don't want you to go. Let me go. Well, all right, go, you know. And so then she went, poof, like that. And, you know, she felt I was holding on to her, and as long as she felt that, then that was her case. And so you get emotionally out of sync when you go through a thing like that, and so you don't pay attention. Another guy, he died of cancer, young man, and the son of one of my mother's friends. And so I went to see him from Chicago Theological Seminary, and visited him a number of times, and one time he died. And it was great. I was working with him, talking with him, and I was his age, you know, we were all just real close there. And he was in his bed, and the drapes were closed and the curtains were pulled and everything else. And I said, why is it so dark in here? He said, I don't know. My sister makes it dark so it doesn't bother my eyes. And I said, well, bother your eyes, you know. And I said, can I open your curtains? Anything you want here. So I opened all the curtains, and then I picked him up and I carried him over to a chair by the window. And I said, now look out there. See all those beautiful things. Look at the trees, and you know. And he says, oh, yeah, that is nice. He says, I'm content, you know. I'm content. Before, he was in a little box. He was afraid to do anything. I'm content. And then he died. And his sister came in the room, and she said, your lunch is ready. And I said, I think he's at a different restaurant. But he had left, you know. She cried for a minute. And she says, oh, I'm so happy for him, you know. And that's great. But you see, we all see ghosts. We all see out-of-body people. We all see other dimensions. We all have been there, done that many, many times. Now, let's do it consciously. Not that we want to or have to or need to, but just for the fun of it. Being ourselves and having fun. Name of the game, right, Heinz?
Right.
The name of the game. So you all have a lovely afternoon. Tomorrow morning I take off for London, but have a lovely afternoon and think beautiful thoughts and so forth. I love you. I love you.
I love you.